thumbs up. Oh, that's only some of you who can see this on the YouTube. If you're listening and downloading, thank you. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talk education. Yeah, it's where all the cool people are hanging out, checking out, doing what we do here. You know, today, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, and Chairman of the Board, Jacob, without Johnny today, Jacob, it's just me and you. I don't know that we're in the saddle, we're in our saddles. How does that sound?
I feel like a toddler without his blankie when Johnny's not here. Everything's wrong. I miss him.
Oh, if it feels, yeah, it's like, hey, we can do this, Jacob. In fact, you and I have done this before.
Yeah, but Tim, if I may say, I mean, I don't want to step on your toes here, but because I know you're highly educated educator and I'm just some schmo.
Oh.
But when we did this in the past, you hadn't used AI as much. And now some time has passed, and I don't know if that leads into anything. I'd be surprised, but.
Well, yeah, I was very unhappy today. Just so everybody knows out there who's listening, so producer Jacob, the chairman of the board, decided to text me a new article, actually a research study, that kind of looks at the use of ChatGPT and its effect on the user's cognitive abilities. Let's use, you know, educated educator type of language, you know, the cognitive abilities. And, you know, the summary of the research is that over time, the use of ChatGPT, according to the EEG. EEG, is that the one? It's not the EK, because in other words, when they
you used to know this, by the way, Tim. Before you started using AI, well, I remember used to know this.
So I'm proving your point, but you know, when they look inside the brain to see when things are lighting up. And so after extended use of ChatGPT versus people who weren't using ChatGPT, the neuro fireworks that were exploding in the ChatGPT people, the firework display was not nearly as robust after time as compared to people who didn't use ChatGPT. And what are the conclusions here? And I'm trying to think, I'm like, okay, so did Jacob send me this article because he thinks that the cognitive fireworks in my head are getting dimmer?
No. Okay. No, Tim. And the fact that that's how you perceived it just goes to show that your cognitive facilities are in decline. I just sent it to you, Tim, because of all the people I know in this world, you love AI the most. And I thought, this will ruin Tim's day. I'll send him this article about this research paper from MIT. Now, I didn't read the full research paper because I'm just a simple man of the land, Tim. I can't look at all that. What I got from that is that using the A1 will hurt your copulative faculties is what I picked up on. But you could explain as an academic what it was really trying to say.
I would say, yeah, if I am using A1 as an enhancement for my cognition, that's probably not a good enhancement. It's good on stakes, though. And
the stakes have never been higher, Tim.
The stakes have never been higher.
Are our children reading good? Is our children learning?
Is our children learning? I don't know. But Secretary McMahon, though, you know, her use of A1, it will definitely help the taste for steaks. I don't know. I mean, the study is interesting. Project Overview, Your Brain on ChatGPT. It comes out of MIT Lab. Check it out, media.mit.edu. You know, a little bit of an academic truly breakdown, and I'm going to try to resummon some of the cognitive fireworks that may have started to dim on me and kind of look at this study. And it's actually interesting because what they kind of did was say, Here you go. Here's the deal. One group, you get to write an essay using ChatGPT. And actually, there was even a middle group. You get to write an essay using Google Search. And the other group, you get to write an essay with a pencil and paper. And then, you know, during that process, looking at the activity of the brain, what was going on during that time. And they did this over an extended time period, multiple times. And the group that only used pencil and paper over a certain extended period of time, they had a very bright firework display. And compared to the ChatGPT users to write their essays over time, their cognitive fireworks appeared to dim as compared. And interestingly, the search people who only got to use Google, they dimmed slightly. So there's the effect here of going, so in other words, using pencil and paper is better for the brain as opposed to using ChatGPT. Is that the conclusion we can draw from this study? Hey, as an learned, educated educator who likes to talk education, the downfall of this study is what this proves is that over a four-week period, the act of being told to write an essay, it looks like something goes on in the brain when you use a pencil. It looks like something goes on in the brain when you use a search engine. And it looks like something goes on in the brain when you use ChatGPT. What goes on in the brain during those moments? It's really still speculation because guess what? We don't know what those fireworks in the brain mean when they show up on imaging devices. We're guessing that a more robust activity, lots of lights, is some evidence that there's a higher level of cognition going on. We don't know. What I like, though, too, at the end of the study is the list of FAQs. And this was the one I sent back to Jacob. FAQ, is it safe to say that large language models like ChatGPT are, in essence, making us dumber? And the answer from the study's authors, no. Please do not use words like stupid, dumb, brain rot, harm, damage, and so on. It does a huge disservice to this work, as we did not use this vocabulary in the paper, especially if you're a journalist reporting on it. So, Jacob, for now, you cannot say that I have brain rot.
Tim? I am a commentator, not a journalist. And I think it's important for us to recognize the difference. You know, yes. A journalist, they have to have standards. They have to really work hard. They have to mean what they say. As a commentator, I can say that those people in their study are dumb, and I disagree. And that, you know, I asked ChatGPT about the fireworks, and ChatGPT said it's bad if you have fireworks in your brain. So actually,
there
I guess
you
it's
go.
A good sign.
See? So there. Who knew that the lack of fireworks in my brain was a good sign? But that's how we go. But yeah, breaking down the study, you know, it's one of those things that we do. And actually, I like the caveat in there, kind of saying, hey, journalists.
Yeah.
Don't turn this into clickbait so that you can get people. And actually, I would say that over the years, Johnny and I have spent a large amount of our time, actually, when we talk about education news stories, particularly research, actually really doing our best to say this is a dumb journalist trying to provide research reporting. And the reality is that the journalist really doesn't understand research, and journalists quite often do choose kind of more sensational ways of framing quote research findings to get people to look at it when the reality is that that's not what's happening. And actually, as any study author, and I've actually done studies and authored papers too, the last thing I want to see is some journalists then take what I think are significant research findings and turn them into clickbait. So there's the analysis from an educated educator who likes to talk education, Jacob.
I had the same exact thought as those researchers did at the end of their paper, because when I first saw this headline, I thought, wow, that's interesting. The New York Post. I wonder if you're giving me the information exactly correctly. So I found the actual paper to send to you. I thought yes. That might be a bit more useful for our purposes. Yeah, everything has to be sensationalized to a degree, Tim. That's how the newspapers sell their papers, right?
Well, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, the fact that we do an education talk show and we call it Busted Pencils, you know, maybe there's a little sensationalism in the title here to get people to come, because who would want to listen to people talk about public schooling?
I think you and Johnny are punk rock enough without, you know, any tricks involved. You guys are great.
We just try to bring it, you know, bring it every day. And in fact, though, I love in this, it's homeroom. It's Jacob, chairman of the board, and me, Dr. Tim Slucker. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci is out today doing things right now. Dealing with hockey, and as longtime listeners know, one of the things Johnny also does do, besides being an educated educator who talks education and a full-time faculty member, he's also the head coach at Washington State of their hockey team. And so this trip that he's on right now is actually related to him learning to be an even better hockey coach. Let's just leave it at that, Jacob.
Is he really the head coach for Washington State?
Yes, he is.
He's never told me that. about hockey all the time.
That's what he's.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's,
you guys,
it's,
why are we talking about this stuff?
Well, you will. You're going to have to get on him then for the next class in session when we do this, because it is homeroom. And Jacob, I am so, you know, when we come back to homeroom, I said, we like to, you know, occasionally say, you know, what's going on in the education news. And actually you sending along the ChatGPT study was a great lead in, I think, to kind of get us back in that mood. And, you know, Jacob, I going to, you know, typically the sources that we like to use on Busted Pencils, Higher Education Dive, K-12 Dive, Inside Higher Education, and Education Week typically is where we, you know, try to start with news. But this one continues on the topic that we have been going on here, and this comes out of K-12 Dive, and the title, 1 in 3 Americans Recommend Trade School for High School Graduates. And thinking about this, Jacob, playing off of the last time we visited this topic, it was students themselves who were saying that they are thinking about trade schools more than maybe they're thinking about college. And now we've kind of got another group of people out in the world saying, I think kids should consider trade schools as opposed to traditional college. And this makes me think, is this a fad that's going on here, or is this actually something to step up and pay attention to? I'm going to answer my own stupid rhetorical question. No, this isn't a fad. This is a reality that's happening. We said people are kind of readjusting, resituating themselves, and kind of looking at what does the future hold and what is the best pathway to get ready for adulthood in this sense, and what kind of education is going to best serve, particularly high school kids as they're about to graduate high school. Is the path of traditional higher education the best pathway to prepare for adulthood, and more importantly, prepare for a life of work? And what we're starting to hear now is that, you know what, higher education maybe isn't the best and only pathway if you want to get a leg up in the world. And Jacob, I know we've been talking about this, but here we go again. So what do we make of the fact that, you know, in less than a week's time, another article talking about, you know, the importance of considering, in fact, a portion of adults, 1 in 3 adults are saying, you know what, go to trade school, don't go to college. How does that land on the chairman of the board?
I think that it's not a fad, as you said, but I think that this is becoming a movement in our culture and a trend in our culture of people seeing that university education is not always the right solution for everybody.
Mm.
And the main contributing factor to that, for me, Tim, I would say is just the overwhelming cost and the high financial bar to entry to getting a degree. There's so many things going on that contribute. AI uncertainty. Is this job that I'm going to get a degree for still going to be there by the time I'm done or 10 years down the line? But if college is free, you say, hey, you know, sure, there's uncertainty, but it's not that big a risk to get that degree. Right. I think that is the main factor. It's just we have an uncertain time, and it's so expensive to go in on this. It's a huge deal. I mean, if you're 18 years old, you're thinking, man, my dad's 52, and he's paying off his student loans. I mean, it is a life decision at 18, and I think there is a lot of trepidation on the part of not just the kids going to college, but their parents. I mean, at this point, a lot of these adults are in that system that we've been dealing with for so long.
And Jacob, I've actually admitted this on this show, as a father of a 25-year-old and a 22-year-old, who is 58 years old myself. I embarrassingly, admit that I'm still paying off my student loans. Some people would say, what? Well, I mean, yes.
That's not embarrassing, Tim. You have more in common with the average experience a lot of people have now than somebody who can say otherwise.
And I say, yes, I went back for a master's degree. Yes, I went back for a PhD. And so, you know, my student loan debt is an accumulation of all three of those degrees over time. But it is. And, you know, I myself look at my pathway and question, you know, now too, could I have done what I accomplished here now differently without the debt load? And my answer to that is now what I know now is that absolutely I still could have achieved a PhD, but I could have done it a lot more cheaply to do it, knowing had I taken advantage of community college, had I, you know, utilized those things. And this is what I think is the good thing that's happening. While, quote, students are making these considerations themselves more and more, hopefully that's because we're educating them better about the choices that are in front of them as they're about to make these decisions, so that it isn't just a kind of like, yes, I'm going to go to school no matter what, and how whatever it takes, I'm going to get there. We're starting to say, you know, that is an opportunity for you. That is a pathway. And if you're going to take out loans, go ahead. That's one way. However, could you take some dual enrollment classes while you're in high school and get some college credit there? You know, could you and should you think about, you know, getting your start at your local community college? Because right now, community colleges and most any other accredited institution, the acceptance of those transfer credits from community college, it's not an issue anymore. It was in the past. People were like, I don't know if I want to take community college credits because I don't know if they're going to transfer. You know what? That was a concern, but I can point out now telling you that it really isn't, because institutions are very much in a position that says, we want to accept your transfer credits, because if we don't accept the transfer credits, there's another higher ed institution that will. And so those students, so there's a little bit of a, you know, kind of market there kind of dictating a new reality. But there are ways too. And then there are work options and internships now more available. So, you know, maybe the reality here that we're dealing with is maybe an indicator of just better education on the part of, you know, let's just talk about what we're saying here, 16 and 17 year olds who are considering their future, that the sense that they're talking about debt loads, that they're wondering about return on investment, and maybe even now saying that, you know what, I'm going to take a trade for now. And as we talked about the classes in session episode from last Wednesday, some who are saying, I'm going to take a trade for now because I know that in this trade school that I'm in, that it's actually counting towards college credits, and that maybe after 5 years in my trade, I can go to college and use those transfer credits from my my carpenter's apprenticeship and go forward. And so I, as much as I think people are alarmed, I also think this might be an indicator that maybe we're actually doing a much better job with helping educate the population, be better consumers of education, so that, you know, because as of right now, that's what you got to do here in America to get yourself higher educated, is you got to pay for it somehow. You know, we talked about what do we like best about international is that, you know, most, what did Johnny say? He didn't say civilized, but the, you know, the developed world has decided that education is like is like a need, like a basic human need. And have made getting an education, not free, but that the population of taxpayers make sure that their population has access. We haven't done that yet in America. So what we're seeing here now maybe is a nice development. And potentially maybe it also illustrates it going like, what in the world? How is it that we're actually creating situations for the future population of citizens that will be in control? How is it that we came up with a system that we told them, for them to become productive members of society, they must first pay large amounts of tuition so that they can then go get a job? It seems to me that if we want to prepare the future to be great citizens first and also good workers, and that getting the great citizenry and good worker skills typically could come in the form of an education, that as a society, we might want to say, you know what, we should make that as easy as possible, maybe even free, dare I say, Jacob.
Yeah, Tim, I think that if we create a system here in America where it is as hard to get ahead as having to take some Qing Dynasty era bureaucratic exam, and if you can't get in, oh, your life is ruined. You can't succeed in this society and in our culture. That's not a good place to be. And I think it could, you know, one could make a fairly easy and obvious connection between the fact that we've created a us and them situation, educated, uneducated, with the current situation with a lot of people feeling left behind in the country, a lot of people voting for bad guys who come with that populist message. I mean, all of these things are connected in some ways. And I think if we were able to evolve the situation a bit to where you don't have to look back on your education and think, oh, darn it, I could have done this cheaper. Well, you shouldn't have to know all the cheat codes and be a paralegal to find out every loophole to try to do it the cheapest way possible. That system sounds like it doesn't work to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know what? Man, maybe everything I just said for the last 20 minutes, Jacob, you may have actually been the one. Oh my God. You know what this is? This is evidence of what ChatGPT has done to my brain.
I was right. Jacob was right, as per usual.
Oh, well, you know what that means. Now it's time for your moment of zen. I am supposing, or perhaps only hoping, that our future may be found in the past's fugitive moments of compassion rather than It's solid centuries of warfare. Hey, thanks for listening to Homeroom Busted Pencils. Make sure you come back, download on Wednesday. Friday, chairman of the board, Jacob's Choice. Man, if you haven't listened to one of those episodes, download that right now, because I'm telling you, you want to be the first people to hear what is going to. I think you're going to hear a lot more of Jacob's Choice in the future. And of course, Saturday, 1 hour of Busted Pencils. If you're in the Civic Media listening area, make sure you've got all your radios tuned. You've got the Civic Media app. And actually, we say if you have the Civic Media app, like our friends in Finland, they get to listen to Busted Pencils on the Civic Media app when we're on 3 o'clock Saturday afternoons. And you know what? Here's the other thing. Check out bustedpencils.com. See everything that we've got there. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, download all of your favorite episodes, sign up, subscribe. More importantly, let us know what you think. Leave us a review, write some comments, send them to us. And you know, here's the other thing. Keep busting pencils.